Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We at Shamrock Farms know you want to get back to whatever you were listening to. But listen to this. That's the sound of ice-cold, deliciously fresh Shamrock Farms milk. Listen as 13 essential nutrients pour out of the milk bottle and into what should be your mouth. What you're not hearing is high-fructose corn syrup, because Shamrock Farms milk doesn't have any. Isn't that wonderful to hear? Look for Shamrock Farms milk on your next trip to Dollar General.
When traders tell us how to make thinkorswim even better, we listen. They asked for a version they could access anywhere. No download necessary. We heard them. And when they asked to execute a preset trade strategy in seconds, we said absolutely. Feedback like this inspired us to build Thinkorswim Web, and it continues to push us. So our entire suite of platforms never stops getting better. Because platforms this innovative aren't just made for traders, they're made by them. Thinkorswim by TD Ameritrade.
Hello, Knight Nation. I'm Trey Strolko. Welcome to the Sons of UCF Live. Adam and Mike here as well. A somber start to this week's show as we remember Otis Anderson Jr., who left this world earlier this week at just 23 years old. Got to tell you guys, still numb by this news in the stages of grief. I am a lot closer to denial and anger than I am on the pathway to acceptance.
Yeah, Trace, it's been a really rough week, obviously, dealing with a lot of emotions, and it's really hard to put a lot of stuff into words. We're going to try our best tonight to do that and to honor Otis and to talk about his impact both on the field and in the community as well. But it's been a tough week. Words are hard this week for sure. So bear with us as we try to work through this. But we also want to hear from you too. Make sure you get in the comment section. While this is an incredibly sad moment, an incredibly sad experience, Otis also brought a lot of happiness to a lot of us. So, you know, we want to both honor and you know, remember him for all he did. So definitely a rough week, Trace, for sure.
You never know what to say when something like this happens. It really puts into perspective all the stuff, the silliness that we do. We just recorded that whole show on Monday, and we thought we were talking serious stuff with, you know, the quarterbacks transferring and the program, state of the program, this and that. And really none of that stuff means anything. You know, we're talking about a young man, 23 years old, had his whole life ahead of him. Such a wonderful kid. We had the honor of watching him play for us for a few years, and now taken from us way too early. I don't know what to say about it. It's been a miserable week. I know we're all going through it. We feel like we know him. Some of us do know him personally. Even if you've just watched him play, you still feel like you've known him for the last few years, and you've seen him grow up in front of our eyes. And to hear this news the other day really breaks your heart.
It has really brought the UCF family together. And Mike, you just said, honored to have seen him play. Honored for the three of us to have spoken with him. I had many opportunities to talk with him in media sessions, one-on-one interviews through the years. And in those sessions, especially at Media Day, you don't always get a lot of time with someone, but in those moments, Otis always gave you his full attention and spoke from the heart. One of the last conversations that I had with him in person was at a media session, and when the recording ended and we were just sitting there talking a little bit, I said, in reference to his mom, who of course is very prominent on social media, the biggest cheerleader for her son, I said, usually it's the parents who scold the children for what they post on social media. Do you ever find yourself having to say, "Mom, pipe down a little bit"? And he just laughed, a bit embarrassed, but also very proud of how much his mom loved and supported him. And of course, a very difficult time for her and all of his loved ones, grieving as we all are.
Yeah, in full transparency, you know, Trace had reached out. So Mike and I had the pleasure of having Otis on episode 124. And Trace reached out and asked if I wanted to play any clips from that show. And so, I don't know, it's probably two or three times I tried to start that interview and I'd get a little bit in and I just couldn't do it. I just wasn't ready yet. And I finally listened to a little bit of it this morning. And I almost wouldn't do it justice if I picked just one clip, because the candor with which he spoke, the way that he explained things, and, you know, listen, we interview a lot of guys and you get a lot of canned answers, and Otis gave you a lot of good truth. He gave you a lot of insight to what he was working on. And I found myself writing down different time points, and I had like 8 or 9 of them. And I said to myself, I couldn't just pick one. The entire conversation, if you're ready to do it, it may be hard for some. And so just, you know, definitely keep that in mind. It took me a while to get through it as well, but it was just a great representation of Otis and the guy he was, and the honesty he gave. And, you know, it felt like, you know, Mike and I enjoy talking to these athletes, and it just felt like it was three friends talking. You know, he was just, you know, answering questions. We were joking back and forth. We do that silly rapid fire thing at the end of the interviews, and Otis was fantastic in that portion of it. So, you know, while I don't want to claim that we knew him and we were best friends, you felt like you were his best friend after you had a chance to talk.
Yeah, I mentioned that's my favorite thing we've gotten to do on this podcast, is get to speak to the players and get to know them a little bit. And I love going over their careers, but that little rapid fire thing and just getting to know little bits about them personally, that's one of my favorites, because I really feel like we're getting to know the person. We're getting behind the scenes. And Otis was great, man. He didn't back down from any questions. You're right. We asked him some tough ones about some play calling with Heupel and this and that. And, you know, he was honest with us. And it's like we knew him forever. And, I mean, I did listen to the interview today. And it was pretty tough to hear it. But I think give it a little time and you go back and listen to it. And you'll appreciate the kid that he was. You know, he's a stand-up guy. And we're going to miss him.
You know, with such a young program as UCF's, we haven't really lost many athletes through the years, and certainly not many of this age. You know, most recent, Eric Plancher, of course, but we didn't really know him like we knew Otis. And I'm touched by the remembrances that folks are sharing on their social media. It seems like everybody had a photo or a moment or a story with Otis, right? In a stadium of 45,000, an alumni base of more than 300,000. It seemed like he touched lives through what he did on the football field, but that he took the moments to sign an autograph, to pose for a photo. He was very accessible, and in that, his memory will carry on for a very long time.
Yeah, he seemed to just get it, Trace, and understand sort of the role he played, and took that very seriously. And I was struck by that as well, as I saw a thread start of people posting pictures, and I kind of stepped away for a little bit because I just needed some time. And I went back, and to your point, there was just picture after picture after a spring game, you know, in the locker room, in the tunnels, at a restaurant, and there's Otis with his arms around a family, a friend, a kid, a parent, an entire family. And then I saw somebody post a screen grab of a DM, and I had actually forgot about it, but I went to my DMs on Twitter, and throughout the years, I would just DM Otis just as a fan. Hey, great game. Hey, way to go. And he responded every single time. And I find it, you know, it's telling that he understood his role in Knight Nation. And I would just say, hey, great game this week. And he would always write back. If it was one word, it was two words, you know, great. Hey, appreciate it. Thanks for coming out. Thanks for your support. And then after he graduated and we reached out for an interview, you know, we had a pretty good conversation via DM that I had forgotten was in there. So, and I saw more people saying that same thing, and it hit me. He just got it. He just understood, you know, the role he played, and he obviously took that very seriously. And I think that kind of shows you that the character of the kid that he was, and that's what makes, you know, anybody passing at this young age tragic. But that just makes this even worse, because he was so accessible, and I think he just got it. And I don't think it's an accident that the outpouring of support from Knight Nation is in large respect due to the way that he treated folks and the way that he made himself accessible to the fan base.
You know, I often rail about how I don't like social media, this and that. I'm kind of an older guy now. But one of the really cool things about it is you get to interact with these guys. And Otis was big on social media. He talked, if you've never met him in person, you may have spoken to him through Twitter or, like Adam was saying, direct messages. One time he got into it with me because I was one of the guys that puts my sock and the shoe on the same foot first. And then I go to the other foot and he was like, don't talk to me anymore. You know, but he's joking around. And it's just things like that. That's why you have so many people that are touched by this, because it's not only a guy that you've watched play, but it's a guy that you've talked to, a guy you've interacted with. And a lot of people, I have met him in person, and he's signed autographs for you, and he's taken pictures with your kids. So for all the memories we're going to remember, all the plays that he's put out on the field, I think we're going to remember him as a person just as much, if not more, because of that.
It's funny that you both say that you have those direct messages with him. I, too, do. And I looked through mine today, and I had most recently messaged him that his grandfather had passed away. And I shared my condolences. And as we know, just a couple of weeks ago, he turned 23 years old, and a life cut too short. It's nice to talk about the person. Of course, we're going to remember the plays as well. And Mike, you're so good at putting together highlight reels of videos and plays, and I know you've done that in memory of Otis.
Yeah, we've been doing top five lists now on our show for a few weeks, and I thought, you know, we got to put together a top five list of Otis plays. He's had so many of them, and there were some that I had to keep off to only keep it to five, but I think I narrowed it down to what most people would think would be his top five plays at UCF.
Well, here we go. Here's Mike's list.
Punt return in Pittsburgh. I mean, if this game is a game we win, this may be number one on the list. The athletic ability he showed on this play, and we talked about it on our show, all the things that went down on this play. Incredible, incredible play.
How does he break that tackle? That was just a fantastic move on his part. And that was such a game changer when that happened, because we were down, things were looking bleak.
Oh boy!
Off his ankles. Yeah.
Everybody loved this one. He embarrassed that kid. He let him fly.
That was certainly one of the plays that he spoke so fondly of.
Yeah.
The Peach Bowl, man. In this whole run, the game against South Florida, the championship game, and in the Peach Bowl, four touchdowns, and he had huge plays. And this one tied the game for 2020 when Auburn came back and took that lead.
Oh boy. Another one.
A lot of people may say this is their favorite. The Peace Out one. Against Memphis in the championship game. Down 17. It's hard to come back that night. Huge play. And number one, I think for me, it's most the screenplay against the Blitz against the Cows. 2017, Warren I-4. To give us the lead late in the fourth quarter. That's when he really started to make his mark as a night.
And, you know, I was listening back to the interview he did with us, Trace, and the peace out touchdown was interesting. We asked him about that. How did that happen? And it's a great anecdote. If you haven't heard it, again, go back and take a listen. He said that him and AK Adrian Killens had made an agreement before the game that whoever scored a touchdown, whoever kind of got a breakaway or whenever you got in the clear, they were going to flash the peace sign. And that obviously he had the iconic play from that game, and he had the honor of a flashing the peace sign. And even that play against the Cows on Black Friday, he talked about how they hadn't run that play. That was not in the playbook for that week. It was something that they obviously had, in the ready. And they had run kind of a cut screen earlier in the game. And Scott Frost decided to call that play kind of out of nowhere. And as soon as he, got to the flat, he realized this was his opportunity. And it's funny, he talks about as a true freshman, he didn't realize the impact he was having on the team, but it just kind of goes to show you he stayed ready, how humble he was, and the fact that, we could probably do a top 10 of Otis plays. The impact he had on the field was just tremendous. You know, we talk about versatility. He was a Swiss Army knife. He was the first utility player. I remember when the Heupel's first depth chart came out, it was utility, and we all went, what is that? How is that going to work? And you referenced it earlier this week, Trace. He sat in special teams meetings. He sat in running back meetings. He sat in receiver meetings. He told us in that interview he never really got a practice period off because he was someplace doing something. And the fact that the telling thing is, I think Mike had asked him the question is, how did you become a punt returner? Did you want to do that? And he was like, I didn't want to do punt returners. It found me. And I think that just kind of encapsulates what Otis was about, that the team had a need. He had a skill set and he stepped up and, you know, he took on a new challenge and learned a new skill. And you know, we saw the punt return against Pitt. You know, the talent he had when he had the ball in his hands.
The only player in UCF history with 2,000 rushing yards and 1,000 receiving yards. And it started in that Navy game. I could have picked that first touchdown in the Navy game, which really sealed the deal in 2017. That was a very close game there to the end. And that's when he started breaking out. From that point forward in that freshman year, he was a big part of the offense, making plays as a freshman, a true freshman, with the impact he had. And then the whole career was just incredible.
And it's funny, in those messages that I exchanged with his mom, oftentimes she would grumble about perhaps the way he was being underutilized, right? That's something we spoke about. We saw other ways that he could be utilized. He was just that sort of talent.
Yeah, and that's the thing about it is, you know, for a 18, 19, 20-year-old kid, you know, in that same conversation, we asked him that question. I think Mike directly said, hey, you didn't get on the field that much this year. And his answer was so fascinating. He basically said, that was a year of growth and maturity for me. And I grew up a ton that year, and I went back to work that offseason. He said he rebuilt his body. He did a lot of things to get himself in better shape. And in today's day and age, Trace, Mike, you guys know this, kids don't get a chance to play on third down, and you know where they are the next day? They're in the transfer portal. And Otis talked openly about, hey, after Scott Frost left, I thought about it, but I knew that I wanted to be here. And after maybe not playing as much in that season, he could have easily said, no, I want to go. But instead, he went back to the gym. He dedicated himself to a new workout. He rebuilt his body. Kids aren't doing that these days, man. The portal's got like 100 people a day. And Otis turns back and says, hey, let me get better myself. I think that just shows you the kind of character he had.
Yeah, night forever, night for life, this guy. Just incredible work ethic. We've seen it on the field. We've seen it in person. It's just it's a shame, man. I don't know what else to say.
Knight Nation going to come together at the stadium on Saturday for one last night walk, Saturday at 5 p.m. Not quite sure what that's going to involve, but remembrance and respect for Otis and his family. Funeral services already planned in the Jacksonville area Monday and Tuesday of next week. All so very fast.
Yeah, and a quick shout out. I do want to mention this, Trace. The folks at Rock'em Socks did a fantastic thing. They made a pair of socks with his name on it and the iconic peace symbol that you see in the corner of our screen, and basically said, we're making 500 pairs. I think it was 22 was the amount, with all proceeds going to Mrs. Anderson and anything that family needs. And those sold out pretty quickly. And I saw even the GoFundMe, they deposited the $12,222 into the GoFundMe for the family. So a quick tip of the hat to Rock'em Socks. And I think it's just been fantastic how Knight Nation's come together. People are talking about retiring jerseys and doing something at a certain yard line. And I think it's everybody's pulling together for this, and it's just been fantastic to see. You know, it's interesting, Trace. We're obviously one of the bigger universities in the country, but yet it feels like a really small community. And I think I said it on Twitter this week. You know, it just, you know, we're honored, Mike and I know you are as well, to just be any part of this community, even the smaller parts that we play. And it's things like this. Unfortunately, tragedy brings people together, but it's things like this that make you know really proud to wear the black and gold and be a UCF Knight.
Let's bring in Nick Patty, former UCF quarterback. He's part of a very small group of people that have gotten to wear the UCF uniform. Nick, this has been a difficult week for Knight Nation, but as Adam has said and we've talked about, it has brought the UCF family even closer together.
Yeah, absolutely. Hard to put into words like you guys have said. I think, you know, early on, really good point to hit. You want to celebrate him as much as possible, right? I mean, it's a hard thing to wrap your head around. So many people have so many incredible memories, pictures, moments with Otis, and it's a hard thing to celebrate, but I think that's just sort of the way we all should try to approach it, you know, and I just think it's, again, another opportunity for me for sure as well to take a step back and appreciate the community of people we're involved with. You see, you're proud to be, you know, part of a small portion of, you know, the rallying and the love that UCF community has.
You had opportunity to know Otis?
Briefly, yeah, with a short amount of time. The small opportunity I had was within his recruiting, you know, process. And, you know, it was a pleasurable experience, just like everyone else has had. You know, it's a unique opportunity when kids come in and certain people get to play that role. Otis is one that I always remembered. And he was one of a handful of people that you kind of got excited that we landed, you know. And again, I didn't know him super well. I'll share my one take even from his time at in the recruiting process. But I just remember thinking how big of a personality he was. But he had this uncanny ability as a young kid to seem to lock in when you started talking about something important or the coaches or if he had a question. He'd go from this big, wonderful, you know, cheerful, playful personality to a 30-year-old, you know, really quickly that was locked in, asking good, educated questions, and it really mattered to him. And his play was sort of like that, too. You didn't see a lot of nonsense from him, or he had some emotional times, but, you know, you didn't see him. He was locked in when he was playing, and that was sort of my short experience with him, and it was a pleasure.
Nick, I mean, I think we'd be remiss to not notice over your shoulder you have your number two jersey, which is probably fitting on a night like tonight. Obviously, the number that Otis wore as well. Talk about the brotherhood of playing football at UCF. I think what struck me is that, you know, obviously there were guys who played with him, but guys who didn't play with him, guys who graduated years before, are all feeling kind of the impact. What is it about UCF and playing football there that kind of creates that brotherhood?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's you feel like you're a link in the chain, right? You know, I didn't get to play with Otis, but I played with majority of guys that did, right? So sort of by default, you're connected through that way. And, you know, it's a tough grind going through four or five years of college football. And so you get so incredibly connected with those guys to where the guys that I played with that played with Otis, you know, are noticeably upset, and it meant so much to them that it means something to you, right? And those blood, sweat, and tears, I know it's a little cliche to think about and say it that way, but it truly is that way. And so when something happens this way, it almost hits you whether you knew or played with those guys or not. But, you know, I think UCF's a special thing too because so many people were a part of building this program. Trace mentioned it earlier, how young we are as a program. And it's guys like Otis that have made us take huge leaps and bounds quickly lately, you know. And I think the brotherhood is so strong because so many of us feel like, you know, we played a small role, and it's growing so rapidly that it's hard not for that to grow a little bit. But Otis Anderson will go down as a guy that played a tremendous role in our, you know, last 5 years of uber success and really, you know, jumping onto the national stage. And he was one of a handful of guys that, you know, were in the Big 12 because of, and, you know, he played a major role. So he's a huge part, and I think will be a huge part of UCF athletics moving forward.
We've seen lots of different ways to commemorate players. The baseball team, they use the Skinner jersey and they pass it around to the best player on the team that week. People have talked about putting the peace sign on the 2-yard line and things like that. What do you think we can do as a team, as a program, to remember Otis and make sure this doesn't, you know, get forgotten in a year or two, and something that we can keep his memory going on for a very long time?
Sure. Yeah, I think those things sort of happen naturally. I love the peace sign. I think that is one of the cooler things that you can sort of pause a moment in time. That was such a huge, you know, moment for the program, but certainly Otis specifically. And you could sort of bring back all those emotions for everybody by, you know, keeping that peace sign alive. But I'd love to see UCF do something sort of above and beyond any sort of symbolic commemoration, maybe whether that be in a foundation in his name, maybe a scholarship, you know, things along that nature that are a little bit more unseen on the field. But I think that what a tremendous opportunity that UCF athletics has to, you know, honor his legacy and his memory moving forward. You know, but I love the peace sign. I think that is such a cool way to kind of pause him in a moment in time. But it would be really cool to start a foundation for whatever the cause may be. But what a cool way to commemorate him.
We have learned this week how quickly life changes. I think back to Monday early in the day, and I messaged you. So we're going to talk about Black Friday, and we're going to talk about Dylan, right? And those become very inconsequential as the week goes on. But we will talk about them as we transition in the show. The Black Friday win gives the Knights an 8-4 record, and they don't get to last with that for very long, and it's overshadowed by the anticipated Dylan Gabriel announcement. When you heard the news, what went through your mind, his announcement that he's going to enter the transfer portal?
Yeah, it's sort of a strange feeling. You know, no, I don't think anybody saw it coming, but just with, you know, with him not playing the majority of this year, it's sort of fitting, right? And, you know, kind of sort of talked about it earlier. Not a lot of kids have a lot of perseverance nowadays. And Mikey playing well this year, new staff coming in. It seems like any excuse that you give to people nowadays, they sort of take it and run. And I don't mean to sound hypocritical because I transferred after a coaching change. You know, so I fully understand sort of what that process looks like. You know, number of things run through my head. He's such a talent, and he's a hard kid to go and replace. And we all know that. I think that it's an opportunity for UCF to maybe get someone that Gus feels fits his system more. You know, I think whenever this kind of thing happens, it's not because, you know, Dylan just woke up one day and decided. I mean, I think there's writing on the walls that people that are as mature as him and as, you know, tenured as him can see, right? So that's done on the coaching staff part more than, or maybe more than the players, right? And so it's an opportunity for them to go get someone. I hope they either have someone in mind that can be a short-term fix while they recruit their perfect kid, or maybe they just have that much confidence in Mikey that they feel like he can right the ship until they find their guy.
Now, Mike vowed on the podcast this week that he just wasn't going to talk about Dylan Gabriel anymore. And here we are now, 25 minutes into the Thursday live show, and we're talking about it. Adam, you mentioned during the podcast that I had reminded you that we did a one-on-one. I did a one-on-one 3 months ago with Dylan Gabriel during media day. And I went back and watched, it's about 5-6 minutes, and pulled a couple of clips. And I thank you. If you'll run that first one, I'll give you a little glimpse of Dylan Gabriel just 3 months ago.
I love it here. I love this university. I love the people here.
That changed. There's also something else amidst the DG, the brand that Dylan said that he was focused on, of course.
There's only one stat I care about. And that's the W. You know, I don't look into the stats. I don't look into the awards. It's not something that fuels me or motivates me.
Adam, your thoughts?
Certainly seems interesting now. I guess the question is this for you. So obviously after somebody leaves, there's always all rumors that come out, right? Everybody starts talking about their perspective, and Dylan faced a pretty severe backlash, I think, from Knight Nation. Whether all that's true or not, I mean, that's not for us to decide. But what I do think is interesting is put that in the shoes of Mikey Keene. So imagine all this stuff is going on behind the scenes, and there's a quote-unquote drama with Dylan and what he's doing. How much does that then make you impressed with the season Mikey Keene put on, being a true freshman? Gus Malzahn told us he hasn't been fully healthy the last couple of weeks, and with some of this behind-the-scenes drama. Can you put in words how impressed you might be with a Mikey Keene if all that stuff was true?
Hugely, in a major way, right? And I think not to take away from maybe him being more mature than we would think at a young age and a not-so-tenured guy, but it's almost one of those situations too. If all that stuff is right, that you sort of want a young guy that doesn't know any better in there, that is just learning. He doesn't have any other experience, right, on how it's supposed to be. So it's almost as if you're unfortunately going to go through those things, you want a guy that's, and I'm not certainly not calling Mikey dumb, but just sort of too dumb to know any better. Right. And so nevertheless, an incredible way, some of the games that we've faced this year and some of the opponents, some of the defenses, and the way that he's stepped up, I think, and not just Mikey, but the entire rest of the team, right? What a toxic environment to be in. And I've been in that environment before with coaches that seemingly just continue to step on players' feet. And, you know, it's an incredible thing when guys can push through. It's an incredible team when a team can push through. And that's a testament, I think, to the assistant coaches and the guys that are in those position rooms and Mikey specifically. But, yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of growth from him. He's a young dude with a lot of growth, but a lot of talent, you know. And so, nevertheless, like we said, DG is a huge talent, but it'll be interesting to see where the QB room goes. Some of the NIL stuff and all that, it blows my mind that could be, especially the opportunities you could have in Orlando, that seemingly will be a recruiting tool for us moving forward, in my opinion. It's funny that there could be anywhere else to go, especially, you know, Oxford or wherever he's headed, that, you know, those opportunities could be better than they could be in Orlando, regardless of school exposure. But that's just my opinion.
Now, quick follow-up. Much has been made about Dylan not, quote-unquote, mentoring Mikey Keene, not really spending time with him. How much is that overblown? Like, how much in this scenario do you think Dylan's support for Mikey would have mattered or changed it? Relative only because they both were in the offense for the exact same amount of time. It wasn't like Dylan was in the system for 2 or 3 years. They both learned it together. Do you think that's a little overblown, or do you think there's some credence to the fact that maybe Dylan could have done more to be a bit of more of a mentor, more of a sounding board or an ear for Mikey Keene?
I think it could possibly be overblown, my opinion. And you hit the nail on the head. It would be my first thought is, you know, arguably Mikey's got more experience in this offense than Dylan, you know? So, but I think where Dylan could have played a bigger role, if that type of thing is true, defenses are defenses, opponents are opponents, breaking down film, preparing for games, things along that nature is where really you need the most help as a young quarterback anyway. Right. So I think if those things are kind of not blown out of proportion and that is the true nature of their relationship, then that's where he could have played a bigger role and a much, much larger role, and not necessarily teaching him the offense, but getting familiar with guys, how to, you know, prepare with your receivers, how to prepare with your running backs, O-line, you know, just that kind of stuff, because Dylan has the experience there and that's where it really pays off. You know, but that's tricky business, but it would be really unfortunate if that was all, you know, extremely true, but I think it can be blown out of proportion a little bit, especially you got a guy that's hurt and maybe checked out a little bit. There's a possibility that Mikey wasn't looking for it, right? Because what we know about the locker room is guys talk, man, guys know things, guys know people are checked out, people are going to transfer. And so that could have very well been kind of shut off in Mikey's mind. And I know nothing that anyone else knows. I'm not doing that. But, you know, you just never know the dynamic of exactly where that stemmed from.
It's been a season of ups and downs every week, right? What's the biggest positive we can take from this year? And what do we need to improve on most going into next year?
Yeah, I think the biggest positive is that you need to come out with an 8-win regular season with a true freshman quarterback that, you know, you didn't really see that coming. You see your guy go down early with a tough loss, you know, and you just never know where that's going to lead. You know, you back that up with a Navy loss. You see him bounce back, though. I think there was a ton of positives. You see, you know, I know this isn't a major positive, but I think there's a ton of room to grow on the recruiting trail. I think that there's a ton of room for guys to come in and make a major impact next year. And I think that's a positive to see that we could be as effective on offense as we could and, you know, really get better on defense. I think that was a major positive. You saw as the year went on, I think we did improve. And their defensive scheme isn't the most, you know, complex, but learning any new scheme is, right? So I think a major positive is you see some of those defensive leaders step up. You see some playmakers start to rear their head. So going into next year, I think our defense is kind of primed and ready to have a couple playmakers on the edge, our DBs to step up a little bit. You know, and ultimately, I think we can add some playmakers. I think the biggest thing that we need to improve is up front on both sides of the ball, really, but offensive line maybe being a major key. And not to say from a talent perspective we didn't have it. I just don't think those guys performed all that well. And I don't know if it was a scheme thing. Or if they just weren't comfortable, but I think that they can improve some things up front.
And Nick, I'll wrap up with this. Fair to say that the 2022 starting quarterback may not yet be on the roster.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's probably pretty fair to say. You know, I think anytime a new staff comes in, man, they want their guy. And Mikey is a version of that for them, but he's not that, certainly. Gus has been active with some transfers in the past, and some successful, some not, but he's been extremely successful with one notable transfer that he had come in that was a perfect fit for what he did. So being Cam Newton is who I'm referencing, but you know, maybe we could go find someone that's a game buster that just didn't work out somewhere else, kind of like we've had happen here in the past, but we'll see. I don't think he's here yet, but we'll see what happens.
Nick, Patty, we appreciate you joining us on the Sons of UCF Live. Hopefully we'll talk to you somewhere around the bowl game time.
Sounds good, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you,
Nick. I'm going to miss you. Do you do basketball too? Maybe you can come on and be a basketball insider. Maybe change your name, Rick Gaddy or something. Maybe
I can learn the game. I'll start watching. All right.
Thanks, Nick.
Guys, have a good one.
Nick mentioned recruiting, which made me think of recent Gus Malzahn Monday presser. It was right towards the end when he talked about recruiting.
You know, I'm really excited about how recruiting's going here. I mean, it's we got a real chance. I mean, we got a real chance to finish this thing really strong. And I think I've told you this before, but it's going to be an unbelievable destination place for transfers, you know. And so the future's bright.
Less than 2 weeks away from early signing day. And you know something that we haven't talked a lot about? It's been a long year, right, at this point for life and COVID and all of those other things, and certainly the football season. But Danny White and Josh Heupel left in early 2021, and both Terry Mahajer and Gus Malzahn came on late in the cycle. So we haven't even seen a full year of Gus Malzahn, and now we're going to get to see his first early signing day.
I think we're learning from that clip, Trace, that Gus does not say anything by accident. And that was a clip before the Dylan Gabriel news broke, which I think we can all assume now that Gus had a pretty heavy inclination that was happening. I think we're learning about our coach, and you know, Heupel was the king of coach speak. You know, Gus is the king of Travis did a super job, but I think he's also intentional with his words, and I think he knew he was foreshadowing what was to come on that. And I thought that's interesting. Now that you look back on that, now the light bulbs go off, and you say, okay, that wasn't an accident. That was very intentional on Gus's part.
Gus is out there recruiting like his hair is on fire, like he promised. And right now we're lined up to have the best recruiting class we've ever seen at UCF. And now you're seeing pictures of T. Will out there still recruiting hard. Some big-time prospects that are still out there that were trying to land some big fish right before signing day. Let's see what they can do to finish this thing off.
And as this transition goes to the Big 12, and we see now that Cincinnati and Houston in the American Conference title game on Saturday going in with UCF to the Big 12, not to mention BYU, a ranked team, it's going to take recruiting at a higher level. The recruiting days of being ranked in the 50s and 60s just isn't going to cut it going into the Big 12. Mike, you asked on your Twitter handle about those pet peeves of yours, which a couple of them, admittedly, because I know they're your pet peeves. I mention them week in and week out, like bowl projections as we come to you on Thursday. Some rumors that UCF might be in that Gasparilla Bowl over in Tampa, maybe against the Gators, but no official bowl announcement as we get closer to Sunday. You wonder if maybe things have got to shake out in Saturday. But USA Today now has UCF against Florida and Gasparilla, as does the Action Network, which for the longest time had UCF in the Hawaii Bowl. Still some mentions that maybe Birmingham or the Fenway Bowl are in play. ECU now going to the military. Mike, you just can't wait for bowl projection season to end, can you?
Sunday around noon, we'll know for sure which bowl we're going to. That's all I need to know is the actual final destination. But I booked my room in Tampa just in case.
Oh, refundable
room. So if we're not in Gasparilla Bowl, I can get my money back. But if we are, I'm ready to roll, baby. If we're playing the Gators, let's do it. Thursday night, 7 p.m. in Tampa. That's the best possible matchup and game I think we can ask for as fans.
If the University of Florida agrees to such.
Yeah, they're going to pull the rug out from under us. It's not going to happen. Either we're going to be playing like Virginia in that game, or we'll be sent to Fenway. Something fishy is going to happen, which is why I booked a refundable room.
Did you book rooms in Birmingham and Boston?
No, those days are not going to work. This day is perfect. I don't work the next day. It's a couple-hour drive from the house. That's probably the only one I can make.
as we discussed last week, UCF conferring with you, trying to understand what works best for your schedule in the planning of their bowl.
Right.
So, that's good.
And I haven't told the wife yet, so I don't even have permission. So we'll see if I can even go.
Thus, the refundable room has been booked. A couple other news and notes from the week. Big Cat, first team, all AAC, only member of the Knights on the first team. Started slow, then led the team in sacks. A couple of names going to that transfer portal, wide receiver Kevin Ahmad and offensive lineman Mike Lofton. You know, not many sniffs on the field for them in their time with the Knights.
Yeah, Ahmad was interesting because he was a speedster, a track star, and you thought maybe if he got on the field, he would make a play. I think he had one catch in his UCF career, if I had that right. So he was somebody who was always interesting. I know he played a bunch on special teams. That was something always interesting. But really quickly, Tatum Bethune robbed. I mean, he should have been a lot higher on that AAC award list. He got jobs this year.
Yeah, guys like Mike Lofton, they put their time in here. And now they're just going to go somewhere where they can get a year of playing time. But it's expected to lose guys to the transfer portal, especially this time of year. You like to see guys be straightforward with you. And if they know they're leaving, then go ahead and do it. But we're going to get our own guys in the transfer portal ourselves. So it all evens out.
Another one of your bugaboos, Mike, or watch lists. Long snapper Alex Ward, a finalist now, one of three for the Patrick Manley Award for Best Senior Long Snapper. It's okay, right, that we mention when he's in the final three, not when he's one of 56.
Right, yeah, I don't mind this. This is the end. You're telling me the finalist? That's okay. When you tell me on August 15th that every long snapper is on the list, then, you know, I don't get as excited for it. But Alex Ward deserves it, man. He's had a hell of a career here, too. I hope he wins it.
Got a good chance. We saw in the R time the preparation that he puts in. I thought that was one of my favorite parts, just how much time he puts into studying his craft.
I just want to understand the measurements for the long snapper of the year. I understand, like, you know, Biletnikoff is catches, maybe Heisman is. What's the metric that's used to determine? I hope Alex Ward wins. By the way, we've had a history. I think Mac Loudermilk was the holder of the year one year. So yeah. Our specialist group is unmatched in terms of award winning expectations. But I don't know the metrics on this one.
So. It's got to be the guy that didn't screw up at all. If you're a long snapper, your job is just get the ball back there clean. And if you're Alex Ward, go down there and recover a fumble or make a tackle.
That's going to be a selling point. That's going to be a selling point for Alex. He needs to put that one on a little highlight loop for the judges in this.
We got a little fun, actually. Hold on really quickly, guys. Jim John, I don't know who that is. A little trivia question. What is the highest rated recruiting ranking UCF ever got? Yeah. Would this be the highest ranked class UCF ever had?
This would be.
If it holds, of course.
Yeah, this would be.
I think it was 2010 or 11 was the highest one. Prior to this, but yeah, this would pass that. I think that was in the high 30s, if I'm not wrong.
That high? I didn't know we had one in the 30s.
Maybe low 40s?
I don't know. I like Jim throwing Mike a question Mike not prepared for. I like that. Jim has watched
tables of turn, Jim. I appreciate
the show before. Men's basketball last night falls to number 21 Auburn, 85-68. Darius Perry with 18 points. Adam, 4 of 24 from three. I think back a couple of weeks, I believe it was on the pod where you said, live by the three, die by the three, that they, when those threes aren't falling, they're going to have to generate some offense some other ways. They went through stretches where that wasn't happening.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't really hard to analyze this game. Auburn made shots. We did not. They made a lot of timely threes. That crowd was really energetic. It made you really kind of think through how could we transform Addition Financial Arena to that environment. Mm-hmm. Auburn's invested in moving the students down to some of the best seats in the house, by the way. So they're right courtside behind the across essentially from the benches. And that crowd was into it. The players were into it. And UCF hung around for a while. They, you know, they were within three or four, and then Auburn would make a three, and they'd cut it back. But yeah, they put the gas on. And really, the challenge, Trace, is we had no inside presence. I mean, they had, a 6'10", 6'11 kid who was just dominating us down low. Bakke wasn't really able to do much down there. CJ Walker wasn't able to do much. Jamil Reynolds, Cobwebs came off. He got in for a while, but he didn't have much impact, and it got off the rails in a hurry. But we were in there for a while. But if you're going to go 4 from 24, you're going to have a lot of long nights, my friends.
Yeah, Walker Kessler. I had nightmares about that guy last night. Darren Green, did he hit a shot, a three-pointer at all last night? I know he started out like 0-6.
Let's ask Jim Josh. Return the favor to Jim. If you're still watching, can you answer Mike's question about?
And Darius Perry, yes, he put some points on the board, but there were many times that he went to that basket. It's just, to me, a little too out of control. And we had a bunch of turnovers that way. So, you know, this was going to be a tough one to win on the road. I don't think many of us expect us to win this game. But now we got to move forward. We got a couple of more big ones left before we get into conference play. Florida State coming up. We got Michigan. So if we can pull one of those off, we'll be in good shape.
So no warming of the seat for Johnny Dawkins after a 4-2 start.
No, yeah, I like the way this team's playing. I like a lot of pieces on this team. We just got to start hitting our shots. If we're hot, we're hot, and then we're going to be really tough to beat. If we're not hitting our shots, then it's going to be a long night.
And I will say, Trace, I know you were at the Oklahoma game. I mean, they played really well against Oklahoma. Oklahoma, I think, had too much size in the end and just a couple of miscues for UCF. So you like what you saw in that game. It was kind of a rock fight for a while there. It was sort of a half-court battle. But UCF's at its best when it can get out and run. It can make plays in transition. And if teams are going to force them to play half court, we've got to figure out a way to adapt to that. And if we're not going to hit shots, if we're going to go 4-24 from three, how do we work an inside game? How do we get guys open for easy shots? I think that'll be where, if this team matures and does something, we have a question later on about our tournament chances. I think we need that to really improve. But I thought the Oklahoma game was nice. I thought the crowd was good, Trace. I know you were there. What'd you think of the crowd and the energy for Oklahoma?
A lot of energy, and you know, that was the one, boy, you knew Auburn was going to be tough on the road, a ranked team, yeah. Oklahoma, quality opponent. That was a one to steal there, and they were in that one right till the end. Would have liked to have seen a better shot on UCF's part at the end of the game.
A shot. Was that even a shot that Tony Johnson took? I don't know what that was. You count that as a shot. I also will never forgive Dylan Gabriel because he decided to transfer during that game, and it distracted me for like a full 15 minutes.
You mean everybody, some 5,000 people all like this? You mean yes. Like that?
Yes. That's middle part of the first half into the second half was pretty much everybody on their phones.
Yeah.
Well, the Oklahoma team is a pretty good team. They just beat up the Gators last night, and the Gators were undefeated going into that game. So yeah. I think, you know, that'll prove to show like it was a pretty good game on our side.
Yeah. Knights return home, take on 1-6 Bethune-Cookman on Sunday. But as Mike mentioned, Michigan, Florida State ahead, and, you know, perhaps some teams, I think Houston, I think Memphis may have seen a way to beat the Knights. Knights now going to have to figure out how to turn around some of those deficiencies that they showed at Auburn. Going around the kingdom, women's basketball just ended late. They beat Arkansas 52-51. Beautiful diamond battles bucket with just a few seconds remaining. Knights improved to 6-1 on the season. This was the first opponent, by the way, that they have given up more than 51 points. So tight defense for Coach Abe. And good luck to volleyball. Volleyball NCAA tournament. They are out west in California. They play Pepperdine Friday night, 7:30, and win that. And they play the winner of number 13, UCLA, and Fairfield on Saturday. All kinds of awards for the Knights this week. McKenna Melville, AAC Player of the Year. Amber Olson, AAC Setter of the Year, returning for another season next season, and Todd Dagenais, AAC Coach of the Year, all well deserved. But this is one I can hear JP Gilbert readying a warm seat for Coach Dagenais.
Playoffs.
Show me what you can do in the NCAA tournament. Pretty evenly matched in this one. Knights have a chance to come out with the victory. Tough one would be if they were to face UCLA on Saturday, but got to get by the first one on Friday. So
it's not trying to turn you into Eric Lopez or anything, but were you surprised that UCF got shipped all the way out to the West Coast?
Certainly. It had not been since the late 90s that they had left the state of Florida. Most of these are going to be at Tallahassee, Gainesville, or Miami. And this has been a good year for volleyball across the state with a lot of top 25 ranked teams. So yes, but I think it's also a good thing too. I think the UCF volleyball stature has certainly climbed. More of a brand name in the sport than it had been before. So, I was surprised that they went out west. Thought maybe even they'd go to Georgia Tech or just stay in the South somewhere, travel costs and the like. So good luck to the Knights. I'll be watching on Friday night. Got some mailbag questions that we want to get through. At PDP Gage with a late one today that I saw in my Twitter feed. Any chance Gus held DG out to give more reps to Keene since Gus knew he was transferring? And, you know, that does beg an interesting question. When did Gus have a sense? Because, you know, when you watched him in the Monday pressers, there was a brief, you know, hey, Dylan's out there practicing, a little bit of a joy there. And you saw it a little bit in our time. And then he turned colder to, yeah, he's not feeling well, you know. So there was a moment, right, when he had a greater sense.
Yeah, this will be a great historical 30 for 30 short at one point. What did Gus know?
No, and when did Gus know it,
right? I think that's where we need to know here. I suspect that Gus could tell, and Nick kind of referenced it earlier, guys in the locker room talk, guys understand what's happening. I suspect Gus had inclinations pretty early on that maybe this was where Dylan was heading. I don't know if Gus was trying to set him up a little bit, see what happens. I will say this. There was an article published on, I think it was 96.5, The Game. And I don't know The Game. I don't know who wrote it off the top of my head.
It was kind of bitter.
There was a reference in there about Dylan asking to play and Gus holding him out. It was unclear if that was a sourced quote or sourced information or if that was a speculation. So I don't know how that goes. Ultimately, I lean more towards Dylan was just not ready to play and at some point said, hey, I'm not going to go out there. And Gus, in my opinion, was doing the stand-up thing and trying to protect his player at the time.
Not only protect his player, but he doesn't want to throw his players under the bus, especially with guys coming to him in the transfer portal and recruits. And that's not the way he's going to handle things. Mike, at PROF Buttons, B-U-T-T-O-N-Z, Gus really handled the DG situation well. What do you think he really thinks about it? You're the kind of guy that likes to speculate maybe about what Gus would be thinking. The other part about this question that I like is also, do you think we can use the huge revenue generated by Sons of UCF Inc. to buy off our next quarterback?
Yeah.
Which you guys like to share. There's apparently a big revenue stream in this I was not aware of.
You see that I have like paper clips holding up these banners here.
This is wedged in the corner, by the way. This isn't even hung.
By the way, reference that, would you, Adam? Yeah. Oh, your new decor?
If you heard the top five this week, I got a chance to meet Nelson for the first time. Nelson, long time. And this was the sign him and Libby held at College Game Day, which obviously says, say Golden Knights one more time. And he wanted to donate it to us as part of our backdrops, our studio. So Nelson, Libby, appreciate the sign there. Makes a nice, fancy backdrop. A good addition to our back facade situation. I need all the help I can get back there.
So, Mike, what do you think? What did Gus really think?
You know,
You've gone one-on-one with him. Come on, tell us.
He cannot be happy with Dylan Gabriel, obviously. I mean, the guy basically quit on the team. He came into the season thinking that he had a very good quarterback and he's going to compete for a conference championship, maybe even a shot at the playoffs. And he's got a guy that backed out in the last month of the season, didn't want to play a rivalry game, not going to play in the bowl game. He's not thrilled with Dylan, I can tell you that. He's not going to make it public, but he's not happy with him.
I'll tell you, blatant product placement time now. I'm going to take a drink out of my new Sons of UCF Yeti that you're putting your revenue stream that you're generating. Mm-hmm. So are you buying off any quarterbacks?
If anyone's interested, I mean, give me a call. I will say, I think our listeners do a great job of trying to make a comment that makes me laugh on screen. I think Robert has won that one for tonight.
Got to spend that paper and lace boutique money somewhere. At Knights HSV, who I like jawing back and forth with on Twitter, I'd like to know now an updated answer to my question of 1 week ago. Does DG go down as the most overrated player in UCF history? He's certainly going to be on a Mike top five list, I'd suggest.
I mean, most overrated is going to be tough.
What'd he win?
It depends on how you want to term this. And, you know, you think about a guy like Cordarian Richardson, who was supposed to be this four-star running back who was going to be great. I think he had all of like 10 carries in his career. So it depends on how you want to define this. I will say he put up a lot of stats, and you could argue in Heupel's offense, anybody puts up those stats. But then we saw how the offense changed from Dylan to Mikey, right? We saw how things were a little bit different. So while I certainly think that it's a fair question to say, what did he win? And did he ever win the big one? I think that's fair.
He won the Gasparilla Bowl.
That's fair. If he won this year's Gasparilla, it'd be big news. I don't know if it's fair to say he's the most overrated. He may be in the team picture, but I don't know if he's the most overrated.
Mike, I need a top five list Monday on the show.
Brandon Wimbush. I mean, he came in and we thought he was going to be the starting quarterback. Yeah, actually, didn't last more than a game.
There you go, Robert. Yeah.
So there's one. There's been a few. So I don't know if he's the most overrated. The kid is a talented kid. Let's admit it. Let's not pretend like we were insane for the last 2 years. He throws the most beautiful deep ball we've ever seen, because he does. But it just rubs you the wrong way that he's leaving. So I'll put him on one of the most overrated lists, I guess.
Our buddy Kostseg Advisor with a rare question. If you were an Ole Miss person, would you crystal ball the next potential quarterback to your roster, likely being Dylan?
This one fascinates me, Trace, because Ole Miss, right? So Arch Manning, the son of Cooper Manning, obviously the nephew of Peyton and Eli Manning, he is the highly touted quarterback prospect for 2023. The Mannings have a legacy at Ole Miss. Everyone's dying to have Arch Manning go to Ole Miss, right? Which really means that if he picks Ole Miss, Dylan's got a one-year gap here, because if he gets Arch Manning, he being Lane Kiffin, to go to Ole Miss, then you've got a quarterback competition between a transfer Dylan Gabriel and the prodigal son of the Manning family coming in there. I don't think Dylan wants any part of that conversation, in my opinion. So he's got a one-year gap here, really, to make himself better. And here's what's interesting. He said to you in that quote, "I'm not about stats. I don't care about stats." But in some of the commentary his dad gave, he said something to the effect of going someplace he's comfortable in a P5 program where he's better fit for the offense. So this is going to be interesting to see what happens. Does Dylan want to grow as a player, or does he want to just put up a lot of stats? If he wants to put up stats, then folks in Oxford, folks in Knoxville, you know, do your flight, you know, tracking. But if he wants to get better as a quarterback, does he go someplace different? I guess we'll see. But that Ole Miss, I don't know that's a slam dunk, because Arch Manning is lurking. And if he gets to Ole Miss campus, Dylan Gabriel is not going to mean anything to those people.
Well, and he'll be completely overshadowed. And the fan base will want Arch Manning socks.
3-1 They will want Arch Manning socks.
They will want Arch Manning. We got quite a few questions, Mike, at UCF 90, at Dare Zim, at Operator Gus, asking about transfers, mentioning Bo Nix, the Auburn quarterback. By the way, Nebraska's quarterback, Adrian Martinez, entered the transfer portal today. How many quarterbacks over the last 48, 72 hours have entered the transfer portal? Quite a few. Any name stand out to you, Mike? Somebody that you like the potential of Gus adding to the mix?
Bo Nix makes the most sense if you think about it. He played for Malzahn, knows the system already. So you would think that would be the easy fit to just put him in here. He's an older guy with experience. That's the first name that comes to mind. The player that I would like to see, that I don't know if it's going to happen, and it probably won't happen here, but what I saw at the Anthony Richardson kid in Florida, he fits Gus's system. He looks like a Cam Newton type kid. So that's something to keep your eye on. We have no clue. I don't think anything about Adrian Martinez. The times I've watched Nebraska play, he did not look good to me. So no thank you on that one. And who knows, by tomorrow there'll be 10 more quarterbacks out there to choose from.
That's right. At Crash Card, asking about the awards the offensive line got and why didn't Keene have time to throw the ball. I don't know how many awards the offensive line got. But really, right? There's first, second, third, fourth team, all AAC. So I don't know that they got really a lot of awards. You mentioned this one earlier, Adam, at Deportes Man 85 with a close loss Saturday. Do you think the men's basketball team, women's basketball team can make the tourney or the NIT? The answer is yes to both of those. I'd say there's no reason not to expect that the future for both programs is one of those tournaments.
Yeah, I think for the men's team specifically, I think they have the pieces, right? They're going to be in a tough conference. Conference play is going to make or break how the season goes. And I think we know we have the roster. If people stay healthy, I think they have a good shot of getting one of those, you know, I don't know, 62 through 68 type spots in the tournament. And if not, at least an NIT run should be within the cards here. If not, Mike, fire up the hot seat.
Oh, boy. No. Mike at Rejoice Knights, what recruits are critical to sign in this incoming class? What position would you focus most on?
I think Nick hit it on the head. The offensive line, you know, these games are won up front. Offensive and defensive line, you take care of those positions, I think we're in good shape. You already see the recruits coming in the secondary, and you know we've always had a good luck with the receivers and their skill position guys, but we need to win up front.
I will say another one. Yeah, all of the names are going to be, you know, Castellanos, Jordan McDonald. Those are the running back quarterback combos. I think two names that if people should keep an eye on. Kenis Thompson is a D tackle, local kid from Lakeland. He's a giant human being. And then Cam Moore, Bam Moore's brother. He's a linebacker. Obviously, we're really thin at linebacker. We're going to lose Bryson Armstrong. Obviously, Eric Gilliard stepped out. We basically ran with John Powell, a DB, playing linebacker. So we need some linebacker depth. Cam Moore's a pretty big kid. I think that's going to be a big signing we can get him in.
Mike, a bowl question for you at @facts_UCF. Big time bowl opponent with a 40% chance of winning, or anyone where your chance of winning is 80% plus?
Now, give me that big time opponent. Give me something to get excited for. What were our chances of winning the first Fiesta Bowl against Baylor? Probably lower than 40%.
But it's 17 point underdogs, right?
Right. And then what about the Arkansas State game? I think most of us would have put that at over 80%, and we saw the way that ended. So the percentages don't mean anything to me. Give me something that we're going to look forward to, something to give us something to talk about for the next 2-3 weeks. Give me the Gators in the Gasparilla Bowl. That's what we all need.
At Phil Talk Sports, he's asking, what bowl game is lower tier that you think deserves more prestige? What comes to his mind is Bahamas and Hawaii. I'd just like to mention, by the way, the NCAA can't figure out how to expand the playoffs, but today they just created a bowl game in the next 30 days. Boom, we're going to have one in Texas so that everybody can get in, including 6 and 7 Hawaii.
The Bahamas Bowl is interesting because obviously for us here in Florida, it's a local, it's local-ish. You can get to it. They play it in a weird stadium, though. I don't know how many people are going to the Bahamas for a bowl game. So that
they
that
play rugby there, soccer or something, right?
They do. I think the bowl games that really have best matchups are fun. I don't even know the name. I mean, they change every year. I think the matchups make the bowls. I don't think there's anything about a bowl atmosphere that really makes it interesting. What are you guys' bowl thoughts on playing football games in baseball stadiums, right? We see the Fenway Bowl, no. Yankee Stadium, the Yankee Bowl was there for a while. You saw Northwestern Illinois play in Wrigley Field. Are you guys fans of playing football in baseball stadiums?
No.
I don't care for any of these bowl games. I watch one bowl game a year. It's whatever UCF's playing in. The rest of it is crap. They could get rid of them all.
You're not going to do a bowl pick'em?
Some fans have asked to do a bowl pick'em. Maybe I'll just do it for fun, but it doesn't mean I'm going to watch the games. I'll just pick them and then just find out who won the next day.
At Golden Knight _2, does this feel more like a 5-7 season to you or an 8-4? It is a very torturous 8-4.
Yeah, I listen, every eight wins, Mike and I talked about it with the Cal game, we grinded those things out, man. Short of the Temple game and the UConn game against Bethune, everything else was down to the wire. What's going to happen? How's this going to go? And so we grinded those wins out. So it definitely felt like it was a tough 8-4. We earned all eight of those eight. Mike says on the show this week, nothing makes you feel more alive than when you're down to a couple final plays and you could win or lose. I guess that's the case, but I'm still trying to figure out a hobby I can take up, knitting, badminton, something that's a little bit less stressful.
At Zeebles UCF, what movie title best describes this season? He gave some suggestions: The Hurt Locker, The Big Sick, The Long Goodbye. I've not heard of this movie, Socks on Fire.
those are good options. Socks on Fire, I guess, would be the winner, followed by The Hurt Locker, because that sums up our season right there.
Yeah, The Hurt Locker. At JP Gilbert, just a great follow for anything you need comic relief on. We'll end with, is Nugget the second the biggest bust in UCF history? Perhaps I should have paired this question with, is DG the most overrated player? But is Nugget the second the biggest bust?
I just love how JP Gilbert continues to find niches that irritate you, Trace.
Just when
you think he's closed one up, he finds
a
new one.
Yeah, he's ready to bust open that Citronaut thing again. Yes. the answer is the patch. It begins and ends with a patch. That is the most colossal mistake of a marketing campaign.
I will say, on this here phone, I have exclusive video. If you were at the Cal game, Nugget and Pegasus crashed into each other. I don't know how many people saw it in the end zone. My daughter was filming for reasons known only to her. I have exclusive video.
Are you going to upload that?
I can. Let's know if he wanted to out Nugget like that.
JP is called out Nugget. But the whole Nugget story has been interesting this year, right?
One job to do. Run on the field, run off the field. Watch out for the big giant horse. That didn't happen.
Well, Nugget, we didn't see Nugget 1. It was half the season before we saw Nugget 2. This was the most action I think we've seen from Nugget 2, and it didn't
go well.
Yeah. Mike, biggest bust is Nugget.
I'm not that big of a fan of Nugget myself, but it's good to see JP give the Nylorian a week off and then find a new target.
Good point. Good point. Well, we began this show in a somber way. We found our footing with the help of Nick Patty and the comments on screen. Let's end reflecting on a positive, a good takeaway from each of you about Otis Anderson.
Yeah, Trace, for me, we said it off the top. It was his accessibility. It was him understanding how much the fans, you know, impacted, you know, Knight Nation, and how he embraced the fans, how they embraced him back. He made a lot of great plays on the football field. And I think, you know, he was probably even a better person off the field than he was on the field. So for all the people whose lives he touched, for all the people who he took time to stop and say hello, take a picture, send a DM, I think those are the things that bonded him to UCF. And I think that's what I'll take away the most is the person Otis was, not just the player.
Yeah, he was a great person, but let's not forget how great of a player he was. And he played in the golden age now of UCF football, the best teams we've ever had, 17, 18 undefeated seasons, and he's right in the middle of that. We showed the plays that he had, some of the most important plays in that run, plays that sparked the entire run. So I'm always going to remember him for those. He's going to go down as a legendary player for us, one of the best that ever do it.
He found a way with his play on the field to bring the UCF Knight Nation together, and now with his passing, his untimely passing, has brought us all together as well, again, as a UCF family. I can't tell you how many conversations I've had with folks this week, people that I don't know that have messaged me, that have talked about a memory they had with Otis. I want to end with something. It's an excerpt of a prayer that's important to me for family reasons. It's from a prayer called Getting Tired. And I thought there was a passage of it that reflected well on Otis that reads, "A golden heart stopped beating, hardworking hands at rest. God broke our hearts to prove to us He only takes the best." Peace, and rest in peace, Otis Anderson. Adam, Mike, thanks for being a part of this remembrance of Otis Anderson here on the Sons of UCF Live tonight.
It's an honor, man.
Send off summer with Panera's Unlimited Sip Club. You'll get endless charge lemonades, coffees, teas, and fountain beverages. The best part? It's only $10.99 a month plus tax. Sign up today on the Panera app and get your first month free. Restrictions apply. Visit PaneraBread.com/UnlimitedSipClub for details.
Other banks go out of their way to make redeeming credit card rewards needlessly complicated, like how they require minimums or force you to use your rewards before reaching some arbitrary expiration date. But Discover isn't like that. With Discover, you can redeem your rewards for cash in any amount, at any time, so you'll never have to jump through hoops. Unless you're like a trapezist, then by all means, go right ahead. Learn more at discover.com/redeem rewards. Terms apply.
Sports Social Podcast Network.